Welcome to Cynicism.
First up on Cynicism, the controversial new political horror film, The Hunt.
We were joking.
And then Nick and I will talk about the Netflix release, The Platform.
El hoyo.
Sí. El hoyo.
What's up, Brian?
Hello, Nick.
How you doing, man?
It is week two, three?
Two. Oh.
I don't know.
I know. It's got that effect on you.
Yeah, it's got... we've been self-isolating except for one day out of the week where I come over to Nick's house and We're social distanced over here.
We got like a nice solid... I'm going to say like 7 or 8 feet between us now.
Yeah, it's pretty good. You're on the opposite side of the room. You're sitting on a different chair.
Yeah, we put a lot of work into keeping this safe and sound for us, but... We want to be able to keep bringing content to you, our listeners.
Absolutely. I watched a lot of TV this week. But last week we had talked about potentially watching one of those $19 theater rentals.
Yeah, I did.
You did it. I couldn't bring myself to pay that much money for a movie rental.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I shamelessly acquired it through slightly dubious means.
Oh, you're so dubious.
But I had already paid to see that movie in theaters, so I kind of feel like, whatever. And I'll be talking about that movie a little later in the episode, but...
I will sit quietly and nod my head while he do it.
we'll love to see it. I, in the meantime, have been watching a lot of movies.
Nice.
I mean, there's not a lot else to do right now. We're kind of all wanting to stay home, stay safe, keep our distance from people. You know, maybe take a little walk, get some fresh air.
Yeah, it's okay to go outside.
Bike ride.
Just go outside separately from people.
But you know, like most people, staying home, staying safe. And I think for me, this has been a good chance for... to catch up on a lot of blind spots, just movies I've never gotten around to.
Mm-hmm.
I recently got a free trial of the Criterion Channel, which I highly recommend to folks, especially if you're a big movie nerd and have a lot of like older films that you've always wanted to catch up on.
I saw you throwing some samurai movies up on your
Letterbox. A lot of them I've been watching are just movies that maybe I saw in middle school or high school, but like... never really appreciated because I wasn't an adult and I was kind of like a rambunctious teenager. So I've been really doing a deep dive right now on Akira Kurosawa movies. I did all 3.5 hours of Seven Samurai.
That's a lot. That's
great.
That's a lot of movie. I still haven't seen that.
Classic. And I followed that up with Yojimbo, which I hadn't seen before. It had always been on my kind of list to see. It's that movie's actually kind of a big influence on the like whole Sergio Leone Western trilogy, like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and Fistful of Dollars. Like, especially now watching it back, I realize like how much those Westerns kind of ripped these movies off. and I also didn't realize too, Kira Kurosawa kind of pioneered slow motion. Like, it's kind of weird to see like. A 50s movie with slow-mo scenes.
Oh.
And I kind of was watching them like...
Did he do it like the way they do it technically, where they just speed up the film and film more?
And then
run it at regular speed?
It's pretty much the same modern technique that they use. And I kind of was watching it and I was kind of like thinking to myself, I'm like, is this maybe one of the first movies to do this? And sure enough, looking into it, yeah, Akira Kurosawa right there at the forefront of slow motion. But it's also just been... I've been doing a deep dive really on like Asian cinema in general.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Wong Kar-wai movies. Wong Kar-wai, I think I mentioned a couple weeks ago, his movie Chungking Express, which is like one of the most wonderful romance movies ever made. It's just super adorable. And
is that the one that was like similar to Waves, like from that director? Is that the same?
Oh yeah. So yeah. That was when I mentioned it. Is the movies themselves are kind of are different, but they have the same format in that they're like two stories that are tied by characters that live in the same world, but at a certain point they kind of flip to another character's story. And both times they do, they play the song "What a Difference a Day Makes," which is really cool. But the tone of Chungking Express is a lot more. It's a lot lighter. It's a lot more
upbeat.
Yeah, it's in a lot of ways. Rewatching it, because I watched it last probably when I was in high school, and I was a huge fan of it then. But rewatching it, you kind of realize like just how much like almost all like modern like the indie rom-com is based off that, like stuff like Eternal Sunshine or Lost in Translation. And I watched his movie too, In the Mood for Love, which was also amazing and an even bigger influence on Lost in Translation. So yeah, Criterion Channel, a lot of good stuff there. Great.
He's
got
nowhere to look.
Yeah. Just, they do have it nicely kind of organized by like, stuff like you can go right through like the Sight and Sound poll stuff for like the best movies of all time. They have stuff organized by filmmakers. Yeah, really, really cool. Nice.
Well, I'm glad you had an opportunity to deep dive into some stuff that you haven't seen or seen in a while.
Yeah.
That's pretty fun. We decided to do something where we were going to talk about movies that were similar to one of the films that we're going to be reviewing later, The Platform, because predominantly that movie takes place on singular set.
Yeah. So, I mean, the kind of idea I had with this was really, really twofold, actually. We're going to be watching, we watched The Platform, we'll be talking about it shortly, and the movie predominantly takes place in one location. Now, the movies we're going to be talking about shortly, not all of them necessarily are, like, a movie shot on one single set. It doesn't necessarily have to be something like, Rope or Buried or Lock or something where it's literally just one set, but these movies are something mainly shot like in one location, and that feels apt because that's kind of how The Platform is.
Yeah,
but it's also kind of, I'll say, how we're all living our lives right now.
Yeah, we're all living on one singular set and occasionally going outside
because we are pretty much all stuck in the house right now, and it's it's rough. But here's some movies we're going to talk about with characters that are probably experiencing our isolation to an extent as well. So you picked out three movies.
I picked out three. Do we want to go back and forth?
Yeah, okay. You start with your number three.
So I think I'm going to start with the most, I think it's the most recent one. You can watch this one on Netflix for free. It's Room, starring Brie Larson. This is before she was Captain Marvel. Marvel was the person in the movie. But yeah, this was one of the first times I think I ever saw her in a movie, which basically is about human captivity. The majority of the movie takes place in a room with her and a little boy. I forget the actor's name, but I remember he was in Dr. Sleep.
Jacob Tremblay.
And if you watch Dr. Sleep, you saw him experience a horrible, horrible
thing. Yeah, not the greatest experience in the world. Kind of traumatizing.
Yeah, so in the movie Room, he also is having a bad time, but he doesn't know it.
No, I remember though, he, because this movie got a lot of Academy Award buzz, he was kind of like the cute, adorable sweetheart of the whole Oscar thing. Because of, like, he would be on the red carpet, and every time he was just excited to get to meet people from Star Wars because he couldn't separate it from, like, the actual Star Wars movies. It's like, I just want to meet C-3PO or R2-D2.
Well, what happens in this movie is you find out pretty quickly that Brie Larson and her child have been trapped in a room with a... had like a locked door with like a keypad on it. They're being held as prisoner by this one man. Jacob Tremblay, is the character's name is Jack.
Mm-hmm.
And he has very long hair because they have no way of cutting it, really.
Yeah.
And he was born in this room. I guess she was captured first And then she was there for so long that she became pregnant because there's some other shitty stuff happening to her as well.
Right.
And she gave birth to him in that room. And then he's been there for 5 years.
Yeah, it's his whole world. Like, he doesn't know anything. He doesn't even believe there's anything outside of the room.
Right. He talks about TV and the things on TV as if they're not real. And I think she's kind of, like, instilled it into him so that he doesn't get too hopeful. I mean, maybe she's just not super hopeful about ever leaving that room.
Right.
But, like, you know, he gets up the one morning and, like, says good morning to all the furniture and the toys and stuff. And then she's just kind of like, she's
probably, it wears on you.
But, like, at times, like, you know, she's a good mom and she's taking care of him and she's getting him excited and she's educating him as best she can. The movie kind of gets through, like, that whole, like, the whole room sequence. About halfway through, they do find themselves being able to leave. And the last half of the movie is kind of like reacclimating to society. And, you know, kind of like an infamous sort of celebrity, too, that comes along with being a human captive in someone's yard.
That kind of like frontline NBC type stuff where people know you from the news.
And then, like, also people just kind of challenging her ability to be a mother to this child. So it's like, is freedom really all it's cracked up to be at that point for her? But, like, you know, there's just all new challenges that they're experiencing. And also he's having to realize the world completely differently.
Yeah.
Because he didn't know anything about it.
It's a really, really great movie. I remember, I think that was 2015 it came out.
Yep.
And that was, I think, my number one movie of that year. I was a huge fan of it. Brie Larson is just ridiculous in that movie. Like, that was where I was just like, she's probably one of the best actresses working right now. Like, every bit of her performance is so complicated and challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you could easily hate that character. Or that character could be just a complete source of pity. But they make her such a complicated, interesting human being. And you completely understand, like, why she's always feeling the way she is or where her mental state is at. And it's also just a really human film. It's really warm. It's a really good movie.
Right. It's a wonderful movie. Highly recommend if you haven't seen it. I feel like a lot of people have. But during this time, it's a good rewatch.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of something that's a good rewatch, the approach I kind of took with this is just counting down, like, my top three movies in this format. And my number three is a movie that, I'll be honest, its filmmaker meant a lot more to me when I was 12, 13. But this film still holds up, and that's Clerks.
Clerks.
So
you're a Kevin Smith fan.
13-year-old me loved Kevin Smith. And I feel like that's kind of common. Like, I feel like Kevin Smith is huge with, like, especially in the 90s with, like, teens and preteens, because of a lot of his movies can be a little bit juvenile. But, and I'll say I've gone back and watched a lot of them in recent years. Some hold up a little bit better than others. But Clerks is still the one in his, like, filmography that is just genuinely a fucking great movie. Like, I rewatched it the other day. It's all obviously just takes place in one day in the life of, like, this dude who works at a Quick Stop in New Jersey. It's, like, a little convenience store. And he's just having, like, the worst fucking day of his life. And it's just him and his friend hanging out. It's all shot in black and white. I believe it was shot on, like, a budget of, like, $25,000. Like, something stupid small. And it was literally just shot at Kevin Smith's actual place of employment when, like, he was the manager and no one was there. So, it's just a movie that's, like, the humor in it holds up really well. The writing is really sharp. The characters have really good, like, intimate relationships that make sense. Like, you get the sense that, especially between the character of Randall and, oh my god, I'm blanking on his name, but between our two lead characters, you get the sense that these are two guys who have just known each other their entire lives and have all these kind of inside jokes. And at the same time, he's kind of trying to learn how to grow up and maybe hope for more, how to be a little bit more ambitious in his life. And it's kind of one of those films that's a coming-of-age story for arrested adolescents, like, you know, people who are in their late 20s who have just lacked ambition and failed to do anything. Yeah, it's still a really great movie, and it fits this category just because it's all in this one convenience store. And
maybe he feels trapped in that job.
Great, just absolutely great jokes and bits in this. I think also anybody who has worked retail or any customer job has moments where they watch this film and it like just hits on a level where it's too close to home. There's like a scene just of like some woman taking out 30 jugs of milk to try to find one where the expiration date is like a month away.
Oh god.
Where it's like anybody who has worked retail is like, oh fuck, I've seen this person, I hate this person. So yeah, my number three pick is Clerks.
That's pretty good. Speaking of bad days, a lot of these movies I'm finding are just terrible experiences.
It's not good being stuck in one place.
Like, I feel like these directors are just like, hey, let's figure out how to make something simple, but also terrible. So the next one I wanted to talk about is the movie Cube. You can watch this for free on YouTube, I think, because that's based on my quick Google search.
That's what you found.
That's what I found. Cube is probably one of the most similar movies to the one that we're going to review later on. But it's a movie about people who have been imprisoned in a cube-shaped maze where all of the rooms look exactly the same. So, and each room has four exits in which they can go in and come and leave. And along throughout the movie, they're finding other people in the maze. So it's just kind of like a story of survival and just kind of like working together to complete a task when the task seems impossible. Because at times, like, just as like, I don't know how you would navigate something like that without any information.
There's like some pretty gnarly kind of like traps.
Gonna say these rooms are basically just super elaborate deadly puzzles.
Yeah,
like some of the rooms aren't that bad, but some of the rooms are like, you're gonna melt.
Yeah, and I feel like it's almost like worth mentioning too, because this movie came out in 97, and it's like, it's interesting how like this movie was not big when it came out, but it low-key was so influential on, like, there's no way the Saw series would have existed if this didn't come before.
I was going to say, that's exactly, I was going to call it, like, it feels like a Saw movie without its rusty edge.
Yeah.
Because Saw feels like it's just got rust all over it.
Yeah.
Whereas this movie feels like a weird, clean prison.
Yeah, there's almost like a kind of like sci-fi bend to this, and just in terms of the look and feel of it. Even something like Escape Room, which came out last year.
Exactly like Escape Room.
is heavily, heavily influenced by this movie.
Right. It uses, to kind of create conflict, it uses a struggle with like power dynamics, where some people feel like they are more qualified to lead groups throughout so that they can survive. Which causes a lot of internal conflict, and just at certain points, like inability to escape certain rooms, which is super sad to watch and also like very upsetting.
Yeah, and this was by Vincenzo Natali, who actually kind of became like a big-ish TV director as well. He did do other movies. He did a horror movie called Splice as well, which...
Oh yeah.
I never actually got around to seeing that one, but I heard it was interesting.
Yeah, I didn't watch that.
But he also did a lot of he has a really keen eye for visuals. And he did a lot of the most like visually gorgeous episodes of Hannibal, which I highly recommend if nobody's seen that TV series. But yeah, Cube's awesome. Really good movie.
Cube is really interesting to watch. It's really interesting to talk about. I do remember watching it fairly recently, as of last year.
Yeah.
The acting's not great.
That happens, I feel like, in horror movies.
The acting's not great, but what they're going through and like the story that they're progressing through is actually pretty interesting. There's a ton of dialogue because there's not really a whole lot to look at. So there's a lot of dialogue to go along with some really grotesque, graphic moments. So just be aware that like if you're looking for something that's gory, this might be okay.
Yeah.
But if you're not a fan of that, I wouldn't suggest watching it.
Definitely a good pick for like a nice, gnarly horror movie. Well, my number two is actually one of my favorite movies of the 2000s. And speaking of movies that have a sci-fi edge to them, this one's kind of full-on sci-fi. And that's Moon.
Moon. Oh, Sam Rockwell.
Moon is I just adore this movie. I remember seeing it in theaters with kind of modest expectations. I actually saw it with my whole family, with my mom and my brother, and all of us just like ended up like weeping and then coming out and just feeling like exhilarated. And I remember us all just talking about it for like an hour after dinner. It's kind of it's by Duncan Jones, who is the son of David Bowie, first of all, and he's kind of had a hit or miss career since then. He did the movie Source Code, which I actually really like.
Oh, Source Code was interesting.
But then his career kind of just hit rock bottom. He did the Warcraft movie. And then I believe he did some movie for Netflix that starred Paul Rudd that did not get good reviews. I never got around to seeing it. I heard it was awful. His career, I'm rooting for the guy because I really like him.
I want to know what this Paul Rudd movie is.
I know it was a similar kind of like sci-fi movie. I'm sure maybe one of our listeners know exactly what I'm talking about.
It's not like that series Living With Myself, is
No. Okay, this was like 2 or 3 years ago.
Okay.
But this was his debut film. And it stars Sam Rockwell as this guy who's kind of living on a base on the moon as a scientist. He kind of goes about his like everyday routine. And he's kind of, in a lot of ways, he's kind of just almost like a moon janitor. Like, he's kind of just doing simple tasks, remedial tasks during the day. And he kind of has like his shift, which is supposed to be like, you know, like 9 months, and then somebody's gonna come replace him,
right?
And he goes kind of, he's just kind of living in this one base on the moon, and then in the process he kind of stumbles on a kind of crashed lunar rover with a corpse inside that looks like his own. And then it kind of gets a lot more complicated from there. I don't want to go too much further into what happens.
Yeah, the twists and turns that this movie takes are wonderful.
Yeah, it takes some super unexpected twists, and I wouldn't want to ruin it from there for anyone.
There is a robot AI that's voiced by Kevin Spacey in this movie.
There is.
So just be aware.
Yeah, or don't. Just be blissfully unaware, because it makes it a lot easier to enjoy if you don't know.
He has a smiley face for a monitor.
But yeah, no, I think what's strong about Moon too is that I think with sci-fi movies, it's so often kind of like this cold clinical thing, or it's obsessed with ideas more than anything. And Moon is filled with ideas. It's definitely ambitious. But at its heart, it's really just a human story. Like, it never leaves its central character. It's super grounded in their mental and emotional state. And Sam Rockwell, like, how he didn't even get an Oscar nomination for this is beyond me. I still think this is the best performance he's given in his entire career. And it's truly moving. Like, in a way that science fiction films often aren't. There's moments in this movie that I remember, as I said, it emotionally destroyed me, especially in one moment, and I remember just crying in the theater. but it's also just exhilarating. It's really, it has a lot to say kind of about, you know, what defines you as a person and what constitutes humanity. And, you know, how you give your life definition and purpose. And it does that while being really entertaining, really funny. It's got a great sort of dark sense of humor to it. Yeah, I can't imagine, like, watching this and not being thoroughly entertained and just blown away by it. So, yeah, number two for me is Moon.
Yeah, I would definitely, like, second that recommendation. Moon was a wonderful watch when I saw it. You mentioned humanity, and my last pick, which I rewatched today, is all about humanity. This is probably the most simple movie set I've ever seen in any movie. The movie is called Circle. Not The Circle, just Circle. I think it came out in 2015, and it has 50 characters, and they are all somehow in this pitch black room that looks kind of like an early 2000s, like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire set.
Oh, weird.
Like it looks like a weird game show. They're all facing each other in a circle. They're all standing in small red circles, and there is a black dome in the middle of the room. When everyone wakes up, all of a sudden they start hearing this tone, and it's counting down, and then a laser fires off and kills somebody randomly. They start learning that while they're in this room, that they can control who gets killed based on a voting system, which is them twisting their hands back and forth, and there's an arrow on the floor that only they can see, so nobody can see what anybody else votes for. So they all have to kind of trust each other that they made the right decisions.
Oh, interesting.
So
kind of like the most deadly version of Survivor possible.
Oh yeah. It feels like a super crazy game show.
Yeah.
You kind of find out what happened to them before just through people talking. People were like, "What do you remember before this?" And like they're like, "I don't know. I'm just here." And like one guy goes, "Oh, I remember. I think we were on the freeway and we got out of our cars and then there were like these ships and then we were like sucked up into the ship." So it's alien abduction.
Oh, interesting.
And the aliens have abducted these 50 people into this specific room. They have one task, or so they believe they have one task, is to choose who lives and who dies. And only one person can live. So through analysis of people's character, like what they do, what their contributions are to society, are you black, are you white, are you queer, do you have kids? They talk about a lot of topics that go throughout, like what makes you human and like what makes you more important than somebody else and how do you value someone's life over somebody else's. Now, some of the conversations basically just bring it up and don't go too far into it, but it kind of shows like this room and like where they lean towards as these 50, people. You also see like what lengths certain people will go to survive. There are characters that are infuriating.
Right.
Because
it's like a microcosm of society.
Right. Like, they're super infuriating because of what they choose to say to, like, basically make their life longer within this room. Everybody pretty much comes to realize, well, we're all gonna die, except for one of us. You can't not vote, because if nobody votes, the room kills somebody randomly. You can't vote for yourself because it cancels it out. So you have to vote for somebody else. You can volunteer, which means you just step out of your red circle and it kills you. Or you can choose not to vote and have somebody vote for you in the end, which is basically how it turns out sort of later on. It's kind of wild.
Yeah.
Like, I was not expecting a movie with such a simple design to be so intense. Like, because there's people just yelling at each other from across the room. They can't touch each other. All they can do is talk. And some people just don't have the ability to talk. There's one man in the room who can't even speak English. And
that's hard for your chances, man.
Exactly. You have people basically saying, like, well, he doesn't speak English, so we should kill him off because he has nothing to contribute to this room right now. So there's a lot of stuff like that.
Yeah.
Hard topics of conversation. It really makes you think about what do you believe?
Yeah.
And what would you do in that scenario?
And what do you value in terms of society?
Right. What would you do if you were in that situation? There are people that don't vote sometimes. There are people that vote in unexpected ways. There are people that barter, cheat, and lie about stuff. They say, like, oh, I'm going to do this, and then they don't. There's actually a 10-year-old girl in this room, and everybody's like, she's 10 years old.
Yeah.
Like, she has to live.
Right.
And so, like, then it turns into like this kind of factions. People make alliances. And this movie's not very long. It's about an hour and 20 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Maybe an hour and a half. But
our friend Mac would say that's the perfect length.
Perfect length of a movie. I mean, it's pretty wild. I would say, like, it does show, there's no, like, you don't know who's doing this to them. You just kind of assume based on what they're telling you. Yeah, it just kind of really blows my mind, like, how many things they were able to, like, talk about
and accomplish.
And accomplish in such a short amount of time. I've never felt so, like, this builds up a kind of tension that I got from, like, watching Uncut Gems.
Yeah.
Except I enjoyed this more.
I'll be honest. I have never heard of this movie, so I'm really excited to check it out. It definitely sounds up my alley.
Yeah, I was surprised on the rewatch. I liked it just as much.
Yeah. Well, that was your three picks. I'm gonna finish with my number one. This is a movie that I'm gonna confess, I think, unlike your number one, you might have heard of this movie before. In fact, I think a couple of our listeners might know it. It's Alfred Hitchcock's Rear Window.
Rear Window.
I mean, this movie is a classic. It's, you know, this is really where the kind of, like, turn in Jimmy Stewart's career happened. A lot of people know Jimmy Stewart from, you know, films like It's a Wonderful Life, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, and he kind of always sort of famously had this sort of, like, all-American, like, G-shucks kind of personality and persona around him. He was like the adult Boy Scout, you know?
He's the boy next door.
Yeah, and an interesting thing definitely happened with his career starting in the 50s when he started working with Hitchcock, which was that Hitchcock kind of opened up a new darker role for him to take on. And I think it's why he kind of ended up growing to become, like, one of the best American actors in history, is because of he completely sort of inverted this persona he had built. And he had previously worked at this point with Hitchcock on Rope, which I mentioned is another movie that's almost all in one location. But this was, like, where he really took center stage. And, you know, it basically centers on Jimmy Stewart playing a photographer who is confined to a wheelchair after an accident. And he's kind of just stuck in his apartment, like a lot of us are right now. And it's sort of during that sweltering summer heat. And he, as a photographer, he's kind of just looking out his window. And he thinks he sees a neighbor murder their wife. But he's not sure. He has no way to know for certain, so he's just sort of studying the details of what he's seeing through his window. But what's really fascinating about the performance of it too is, like, if you just listen to that premise, in a lot of ways it could still sound like Good Samaritan Jimmy Stewart just trying to be the nice guy, but there is almost something voyeuristic about the performance that lends it, like, this kind of morally gray area to it. I mean, he's not watching his neighbor's wife initially because he's concerned for her. It is something a little bit more seedy. And, you know, the camera definitely gives you his perspective on this. And that's why when things get a little bit more violent and thrilling, it almost feels like a little bit more dubious. You're not sure if we should really be trusting our protagonists that we're seeing through the lens of, because of you don't trust that necessarily he's in a right state of mind. And that's something that Hitchcock plays with throughout the movie so well. This kind of lingering thought of, is our character really trying to do the right thing? Or is this just paranoia? Is this just a person whose mental state has sort of deteriorated as he's, you know, been confined with nothing to do in sort of the state of cabin fever? And just is not a very good or noble person necessarily. It's just got all one of the all-time like great performances from Jimmy Stewart. Grace Kelly's great in it too. And it's been so inspirational for cinema as a whole. I think this is probably one of the most influential like thrillers ever made. It really was one of the first movies. Well, I mean, Hitchcock in general kind of originated this style of thrillers, kind of confined to one set. And I mean, the thing about Hitchcock's movies, though, is they just hold up. Like, there's so many great filmmakers where you can look at their work and it does feel kind of like dated and a little antiquated now. The pacing and sort of just sound and movement in these films, it feels modern. You can see the influence on how sort of a cinematographer moves their camera, the sort of weight and like moments that you build up to a suspenseful set piece. It feels so influenced now, you know, like filmmakers like David Fincher wouldn't exist without Alfred Hitchcock. Even people like Bong Joon-ho famously, even in Parasite, has like a little Hitchcock book on their mantelpiece in the big home. You know, so many modern filmmakers who make suspense and thriller films took everything they knew from Alfred Hitchcock. I think this is probably not necessarily my favorite. That's still Vertigo. But this is probably in my top five Hitchcock. I mean, what else do you really say about Rear Window? It's one of like the most famous thrillers of all time. If you have seen it, I'm sure you know exactly what I'm talking about. And if you haven't, now's a great time to catch up on it, because, you know, like, I mean, that's kind of what I've been doing. Is there's while I'm here every week and talking to you, and I like to pat myself on the back as a film nerd, there's a lot of shit I just haven't seen. A lot of stuff that might be super obvious. And now's a really good time to work through those movies. I've been working through, as I said, Kurosawa movies, Billy Wilder I'm starting on now. I haven't seen Sunset Boulevard. I'm really excited to. Rear Window is my number one pick.
Awesome. Yeah, so there's some movies that you guys can check out. Look into some streaming services that you may not know about. I mean, some of us didn't realize there were Criterion Collection
yeah.
that you can stream.
Criterion's a good one. There's also Mubi is a really good one, M-U-B-I. And, you know, a lot of times, too, if you just are really interested in a movie, you can sometimes throw it in, like, the search engine on your smart TV, Amazon, Roku, whatever, and it'll bring up, you know, that it's streaming on some free app that you've never heard of before, like yeah. I don't know, Crackle or whatever. But
I've been surprised by the amount of movies that are available on YouTube.
Yeah,
like it's been kind of shocking. There's been whole like movies that are kind of like out of circulation that are old. I watched like the like Manos.
Oh yeah, fuck yeah, we watched that together like yeah. a couple months ago on off YouTube.
So like Manos is just a terrible horror
not,
film
not good. But hey, if you know, I know a lot of people have been doing it, I've been doing it myself. If you're kind of just you know, FaceTiming with friends or meeting up on Zoom or something like that and all watching a movie together, if you get like the bunch of you to get a few beers in and throw Manos on, you're gonna have a grand old time. It's the like one of the worst bad movies ever made, and it's fucking hilarious.
But it has the best costume I think I've ever seen.
Yes. well, there's a couple picks for you. We're going to be up next with some thoughts and a short review of The Hunt, and we'll be talking about The Platform as well.
Why would they do something like that?
Same reason elites do anything, because they think they're better than us.
Yeah, but why you? I mean, it seems so personal, right?
What, you think it's our fucking fault?
No, that's not what I'm... No, I would never blame the victim.
Yeah.
There'd have to be a reason is all. Can you think of anything at all, no matter how minor, that might make somebody want to try something as...
Oh my God! Oh! What? No, my God! Stop the car! No! Oh my God! Oh! Are you out of your mind, woman?
All right. So this was a movie we kind of talked, teased at the beginning here. This was a movie that was originally released in theaters and is now available on video on demand. I had actually seen this movie in theaters before it was available on demand. Actually, weirdly, this is probably the last movie I saw in theaters. I saw it like, if we're kind of looking back.
What did you see?
A movie, Brian.
What movie?
A movie that I'm gonna talk about. God damn it. So this movie that I saw 2 weeks ago.
All right.
And it was the day before movie theaters were closed. And it's a movie called The Hunt. Fuck you, Brian.
I'm sorry.
So anyway, the hunt kind of is an interesting case here because of it's definitely a movie that was heavily discussed before it came out. It was originally scheduled to come out last September, and then it kind of found itself in this weird sort of political firestorm, mainly because of the premise of the film centers around basically the ideas like. A group of, like, redneck, conservative, super, like, right-winger types, like, wake up and have, like, been kidnapped, and they find themselves on, like, this, like, giant woods retreat type thing, and they're being hunted by, like, super left-wing liberal types, and, like, the right-wingers are called deplorables, and, like, the, left-wingers are referred to as elites, and it's like super loaded with politically charged language. Now our not very smart president kind of heard this heard about the premise of this movie, or saw probably one of his dickhead like advisors or something showed him like a YouTube trailer, and he doesn't understand the concept of satire, so he just literally thought it was a movie that Hollywood was making about like, hey, liberals, go kill those right-wingers. And he's like, this is disgusting. I have never been so outraged in my life. These are the types of movies that Hollywood are making now. They're telling you that you should kill people for their political beliefs. The people in middle America. This is the kind of trash Hollywood wants to promote. And like went on like a fucking Twitter firestorm, as he always like tends to do at 3 a.m. when he doesn't have anything better to do. Like maybe actually look after our country. So this got a lot of political heat. Then you had like fucking congressmen and senators talking about it. This movie was on Fox News. And it, then shortly after, unfortunately, as also frequently happens in our country, there was another school shooting shortly after. And kind of in the firestorm of those two things happening in 1 week, Blumhouse, the distributor, kind of was like, all right, we're going to kind of shelve this for now. We think there's far too much controversy around it. We don't want people like picketing our movie. And they kind of shelved it for a while. And in a continued run of bad luck for this movie, it finally got released the weekend theaters shut because of the coronavirus. So it was in theaters probably 2 days and then got shelved.
But luckily for it,
it is available now on video on demand. And I I'm curious if people are checking it out. I'm not sure. I'm kind of gonna say this is an interesting movie because I almost feel like everything leading up to it is slightly more interesting than the movie itself. That's not to say I don't enjoy this movie. It's more that I think The Hunt is an okay movie that I have a lot of fun with, more than necessarily a good movie. So this is kind of like the definition of like B-movie exploitation trash, but in a way that like doesn't kind of get made anymore. Like it almost feels like a kind of movie that would have been from like maybe like the late 70s or early 80s in terms of just like being very nasty. Like this isn't like it's kind of got a weird just like I don't give a fuck attitude to everything.
No filter at all.
Yeah. And I will say, in terms of the political spectrum of this movie, because of people, as probably anything that is comes with such like charged language around it, I'm sure people want to put a lot of ideology of their own on it. You know, they want to, you'll probably see some people trying to make the argument that this is like a left-wing movie, that this is a right-wing movie. But in all honesty, like, I think what this is more than anything is it's a movie that takes both sides, and it definitely satirizes both of them in kind of like over-the-top caricatures. Like nobody in this movie is really like truly representative of those of people on the left or right. They're all kind of outsized personalities. But it is more, if I'm really looking at kind of the subtext of it, I do like that it's kind of a movie about how in today's political climate, people are quick to kind of just confirm their own biases of somebody. Like if somebody has one issue they feel a certain way on, we kind of want to perceive whatever bias we already have about right-wingers or left-wingers or somebody who's maybe, I don't know, pro-Second Amendment or pro-LGBT rights. We want to then imagine that all their viewpoints and all their ideology fits essentially like that Fox News or NPR narrative, like that they believe only one thing. And it's kind of a movie that, if anything, it's more mad that we're in a political binary now rather than being able to have gray area and being able to kind of our beliefs are able to intersect and actually be in conversation or dialogue with each other, which I think is actually an interesting idea for a horror movie. I will say what I say when I talk about this being kind of exploitation trash, though, is like this is a gnarly movie, and that's kind of why I say rather it being good or bad, it's just a lot of fun. Is this movie has like gruesome deaths, but in a way that aren't like, it's not like Saw, like it's not like you're reveling in sadism. It's more just, it's almost like the Kill Bill school of like something gross happens really fast and you're like, oh shit, that was wild. I do think its sense of humor is kind of hit or miss. The one thing I will say, the real standout for me of the movie though is its lead is Betty Gilpin, who I believe is on Glow.
Yeah.
So I think we've talked about this on the pod. I haven't watched Glow, which...
But you need to.
...doesn't make any sense because I'm a wrestling fan and I'm an Alison Brie fan. I like Marc Maron. There's pretty much all the reasons in the world I should be watching this show.
And Glow is a real thing?
And like, everybody tells me it's great. So I should watch it. But Betty Gilpin's really the star of The Hunt. And holy fuck, she kicks ass in this movie. Like, if there is one true, just like, oh my god, standout, it's that, like, she comes onto this movie and she is, like, she is Uma Thurman in Kill Bill. She is Sigourney Weaver in Alien. Like, she is that, like, badass heroine. She's got, like, this very, like, nonchalant... Like, she's Southern, so she's got, like, this drawl, but she's got, like, a nonchalant attitude towards everything. And, like, it's just really fucking funny. She's the one part where, like, whenever she has a line of dialogue that's supposed to be comedic to deliver, she just absolutely murders it. And, like, any action sequence she's in, and I'll say the action sequences in this movie are actually super well done. She's phenomenal in it. There's, like, a final fight in this movie that's really fucking good, and she kills it. I don't know if this is a good movie. I really don't. I've heard, if you look at the reviews of it, they're very polarized. Some people really like it, some people really hate it. I kind of find myself in the middle where I'm sure this is a very pedestrian movie, but I had a lot of fun watching it. It's kind of just, it's goofy, it's silly. I don't think it takes itself too seriously, and I don't think its political subtext is as smart as it's well intentioned, but I don't think it's as smart as the film itself thinks it is.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
Like, in your opinion, do you believe that this movie is worth the ticket price that they're posting right now for the early access VOD?
I would say for me, if you're curious to see it, yeah, I would pay it. But I think we've kind of talked about the price point here. I don't have that big an issue with the price point. I think it kind of makes sense. If you're somebody who finds yourself in it, I mean, it's also different. If you're somebody who finds yourself in a state right now where you're really struggling, you know, maybe throwing down $20 for a movie on VOD isn't the smartest choice. But if you have the money and you kind of would go see this on a Friday night at a movie theater, if the theaters were still open, by all means, go ahead and rent it. I think it's a fun movie.
Okay. Well, I still find that such a hard time to pay $20 for just a rental. After even seeing, like, other movies come out with, like, much lower, closer to regular theater costs. So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I probably might still wait to watch this movie.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about it is in terms of... So, I guess we kind of touched on this last week, but if I want to go into it a little further... I think the thing about the $19.99 price point, and I know I've had a few different discussions with people on this since that came out, is my understanding and my kind of logic of it is this. Most people, by and large, are not watching a movie alone.
Right. But they're not doing that with other rentals either. This basically is just skipping over the theater side. And the only reason why theater tickets are so much is because you're also sharing that with the theater as well.
Well, yes and no. I mean, the thing about it is by and large, if you were to see this movie in theaters and you're seeing it with other people, if you see it on a Friday night, that's going to be well over $20. Like, because of on average, I mean, in our area especially, you're probably paying like $24, $25.
Right, but we're not in the theater watching this movie. We're at home.
Right, but the thing about it is at the end of the day, this is still a brand new movie. This is a movie that was...
So are a lot of Netflix movies, and they're not any more than the price of the subscription.
But you're already paying the subscription fee.
Which is, like, $11 a month.
Right. I mean, my counter to that would be, though, is, like, in terms of those films, the cost for both the budget and marketing of those films aren't comparable.
Like if you take The Irishman?
I mean, The Irishman is a rare case where it's an Oscar movie, but if you compare that to, like, Spencer Confidential...
I didn't watch it.
Like, that's, like, the number two movie on Netflix right now. Like, that's a movie that has no advertising budget. It's got Mark Wahlberg. I don't know how much his cost was. But aside from that, you know, these are movies kind of made by formula. And I think the big thing for me about this is that right now we're in a situation where, because of coronavirus, these movies are appearing on video on demand because there's no other way for you to watch them.
Sure.
But the thing about it is once this is over, I don't think this is going to stop. Like, I don't think these movies that are being released on video on demand are suddenly going to stop, because it feels like this is something that's been kind of coming for years.
I feel like at the point when the theaters are actually open, a $20 price point makes more sense.
Right.
But in the sense of, like, right now, when theaters aren't open, it should we only have the ability to watch movies from home. So it should remain that, like, theaters are skipped. You're just going to have to deal with that and kind of, like, eat those costs for now.
I mean, the thing about that, though, is at the end of the day, these are, though, like, if you take the people who make these films, these are creators who are judged on what the grosses of their last project made. So the ability for these filmmakers to possibly make another project are going to be looked at compared to the gross of that film. So if a film like, say, something like The Hunt came out with a, like, $6.99 rental fee, something like that, where it's making only, like, a third of what it would have made in terms of the actual ticket costs that people would be paying on a Friday night.
Infinite access to everyone who has internet.
Well, I'm sorry.
But with an infinite access to anyone who has internet, like, anyone has the ability to download and rent that, as opposed to people who don't go to the theaters. Like, you've basically made your audience so much bigger.
I think that's debatable, because I think in a lot of ways, the audience that goes is the audience that goes. Like, I don't think there's going to be people who are going to spend $6.99 on a movie that they don't have interest in. I think those are the type of people who would either see it in theaters or would just watch Spencer Confidential.
Right. But, you know, like, sitting here as a moviegoer, like, I'm glad to pay, like, a ticket price to go into a theater, because I'm not only am I paying for the movie, I'm paying for an experience to be in that theater.
Too. Right.
Whereas, like, that price is reasonable. And when it comes to, like, a $20 price point, I can buy a movie for $20. Why would I just rent a movie for $20? I think it's, like, there's definitely more people with that same mind frame. So you're kind of cutting your audience into a place where it's, like, saying, like, why would I pay $20 when I can just wait?
Yeah, and I mean, I think for me, I mean, first of all, the point of that is I agree with you 100% on the value of the theatrical experience. For me, that's something that's important, it's meaningful, it's something that's super special to me, and it's something that I want to preserve. But I think, sadly, with the way our culture is right now, And you know, I shouldn't even say sadly, because if it's a point of preference, I think with a lot of people, especially those younger than us, the theatrical experience is not something meaningful. They don't care about it. There's a lot of people who don't go to movie theaters or actually actively dislike going to movie theaters. And the thing about this is when the movie theaters do open up, in terms of, like, the price point, if you set something almost in stone now, it's easier to carry that through when the theaters open back up again. If you were to suddenly put these movies at a lower cost on video on demand right now, I think that would do two things. I think, first of all, it would upset your relationship that you have with the theaters that distribute your movies, because of, regardless of if the theaters are open or not right now, these are still theaters that basically were originally guaranteed a run of your movie, and now find that you're showing those same movies for a cheaper price on demand. And then the second thing that would happen is when the theaters do open back up, and we don't really know right now, from a consumer standpoint, you would see these movies that were initially $6.99, $7.99 a couple months ago are now shooting up to $20, and you would wonder why you're being price gouged. And I think as a consumer, that would make you upset. I think if you set $20 as the kind of standard price point to begin with, then what it does is, in a couple months from now, when theaters open back up, it gives the consumer the choice of, okay, I can either pay $20, and maybe that's more reasonable for me and a friend at home, or maybe I want to see this movie in the theaters myself for, you know, $8, $9, and I'll go have that theatrical experience. I think that makes more sense for
the future.
For the future, yes. And I think that's the way I always think about these
right,
things.
Like, I do agree with you in the future sense.
Yeah.
I think there is ways to basically explain to audiences that, hey, like, this is temporal. This is temporal. Like, this is only going to be for now. Just know in the future that things will change.
I would like to have that faith in audiences. I don't. I don't have faith. People don't understand anything.
oh, geez.
the kind of the conversations I have to explain to even explain, like, why, you know, popcorn's a little bit more expensive at the movies. I'm like, you have to understand how bad theaters are struggling right now.
Oh, yeah. Theaters have a very hard time. And to kind of segue into the next thing I was going to, I wanted to talk about, we want to give away some vouchers to movies in the future, maybe even virtual tickets to theaters that might be in your area. So if you're a listener and you follow us on Instagram at Cynicism Film, yeah, is that us?
Yeah.
So go to Instagram, follow us on at Cynicism Film, and just, you know, send us a DM that says something along the lines of, hey, send me a free ticket or something. And we're going to, like, if you're not in the area, we'll figure out a way to get you a ticket for something in your area, whether it be virtual or something like a voucher for the future, to help support a local theater in your area, as well as where we're from, Buffalo. So if you're here, we're going to send you something from probably North Park Theater. They have virtual tickets as well as vouchers that you can use in the future.
Yeah, because definitely local theaters are hurting right now, and we definitely... We expressed our love and admiration for the theatrical experience, and we definitely want to see those open back up when all this madness is over. So, yeah, please hit us up on our Instagram, and we'll have more details for you. But right now, we're going to go to a movie that wouldn't have been ever available in theaters to begin with, so maybe this isn't a great segue.
That was a segue to the other thing.
But we're going to talk about The Platform.
Hay tres clases de personas, los de arriba, los de abajo, los que caen.
El hoyo.
Sí, el hoyo.
¿Y usted sabe en qué consiste esto del hoyo?
Obvio. ¿Comer?
¿Qué vamos a comer?
Lo que le sobra a los de arriba.
¿Hay mucha más gente abajo?
Dentro de poco habrá menos.
¿Que era una persona?
Pues claro que era una persona.
¡Es que nadie va a hacer nada!
Nick, do you have a message for me?
No.
No? Oh, come on. We're going to talk about The Platform. Do we restart?
So The Platform, what did you know going into this movie, Brad?
Nothing. I didn't even know it was a foreign film.
So I kind of knew a little bit, but I'll be honest, not much. Brian's going to roll his fucking eyes at me real hard here in a second. The reason I do know about this movie is it played at TIFF last year.
Ooh, I thought we were done with the TIFF. I thought we were done with TIFF, but we're not.
We're never done with TIFF. So this movie, actually, they have like a Midnight Madness series at TIFF where they play like a different horror movie at midnight. And a lot of cool stuff kind of premiered in that slot. St. Maud, which actually, sadly, we don't know when we're going to be able to see it now, played in that slot, and I regret not seeing it then. But this played in one of those slots, too. And I have to say, a mixture of emotions, because at once I kind of wish I went to one of these, because a lot of these movies seem really cool. This doesn't seem like the kind of, like, fun, happy-go-lucky midnight movie, though, that I want to see at midnight in front of a full crowd.
You know, I think I actually watched this really late at night.
I did. I think I did watch it too, probably around like 10 or 11. But and I did. I guess we're probably going to go into it. I think I mostly liked this movie, but this movie is depraved. Like it is. It is not. It is not very light. It is not fun and kind of carefree. Kind of like the central premise of this is that it takes place in like this weird giant building thing where people can...
But you don't really see the outside.
Yeah, you never really know where this is located.
Yeah.
But essentially...
But you know some people can volunteer to go in there.
Yeah, you know that essentially people can either volunteer to go into this. Other people, it seems, have just been like... I think they're like... Some of them are criminals who have been put in here. Some of them are just... homeless people, it seems like.
I found it interesting that there was a world outside of this environment that we've been placed in.
Yeah, and essentially the very simple premise of this is that people wake up on a different platform in this giant structure, and every day food is delivered platform by platform, starting at the top and gradually going to the bottom. And on each platform, you have, like, I don't know, like a series of minutes where you can take food from this lowering kind of platform.
But you can only eat during the time if the platform is in your room. Like,
right.
You can't eat any other time than that.
You can't take food from
food.
It.
Yeah.
You can only eat during that time, and you're essentially eating the scraps that are left behind from the platforms above you.
So the higher the level you're on, the nicer the food is going to be.
The nicer the food, the more options
there
are.
Or you're even
going
to have food.
Yes. And the lower you go, you might not even have food available, because it may all be gone. With that, with us describing that premise, you can probably put two and two together there and note that this is like a very unsubtly political movie. It's definitely about like capitalism and the kind of system created by capitalism, and this kind of it's a kind of a complete fuck you to the like trickle-down economics idea, the idea that somehow wealth will prosper to everybody if everybody at the top is doing really well.
Right.
Which, I'm going to say, I don't mind that. I think that's actually really good. I think in a genre film, sometimes you don't want politics to be necessarily subtle. Sometimes you want them to hit you just, like, with brute force. And I will say... there's one scene in particular in this movie when it does come to the political allegory that I really, really like. And it's when our protagonist wakes up in a new room with a new roommate. And this roommate is new to this sort of structure, the platform. They don't fully understand this world yet. And they're convinced that they can get through to the people below them to put things aside. All they gotta do is talk to them. If they just talk to them, they'll set aside more for everybody else. That's all they gotta do. And they won't. They completely disregard everything she's saying. And I think that's such almost like a great representation of kind of where we are politically. Because you do have this idea of like, oh, the free market will take care of people. You know, if we make sure to set up charity organizations and give everybody enough wealth, they'll share it. Yeah, for sure. It doesn't happen like that.
Well, it doesn't happen in this movie.
And it doesn't happen in this movie. It's completely disregarded. And I think that's probably the moment allegorically where it's sharpest. As a genre movie, I like it. I like it. I don't love it.
I like the idea that this movie is trying to portray.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, I found myself increasingly getting more bored as the movie went along, because its pacing is kind of just like super sluggish. It's also a little bit difficult to like constantly just be like tongue-in-cheek the whole time, you know? Like where it's basically just kind of... maybe it's not tongue-in-cheek, it's not the right word, but basically the political allegory that's throughout, present all the time, is just constantly just like hitting me in the over the head, like certain characters are hitting certain other characters over the head. It just kind of got to a point where I was like, okay, I'm kind of done with this, like, what's the next thing?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you in terms of, I do feel like this movie is only an hour 40, and I still feel like they could have trimmed like 20 minutes off it.
Easily.
There is also a weird sort of subplot in this movie that I don't want to give too much away, because of some of the fun that is in this movie does rely on some of the revelations we get, especially early on in the movie. But there is almost like a weird sort of romance subplot in this movie that I fully don't understand, nor do I think works.
It's not developed very well, and it's pretty abrupt.
And we don't really feel like there's a... Beyond the very blatantly obvious, we don't have a reason why these two are connecting.
And I also just wonder if it's just the case of, like, maybe this is how he learns an ideal from this other person. But that's the only thing I can really derive
and
from
we
it.
Should say, and I've kind of said it before, though, I think another thing of it is, in terms of the pacing, I think a lot of it is just due to... and this is something I like as much as dislike, the pure, like, unpleasantness of this movie. Like, there is nothing, there is no, like, bright ray of hope in this movie.
You don't even really meet a character that you necessarily fully
enjoy. Like. Yeah, everybody in this movie is kind of terrible. I think and it's just grim. Like, the visual look of the film is grim, but the actual... visuals that you're seeing, you know, this really fucking gnarled up gross food is fucking disgusting to look at.
Man, there's, the food gets real gross and gnarly.
And there's really graphic gore in the movie.
Oh yeah.
Which again, that's something that I respect as much as found gradually unpleasant. Like, I do almost kind of appreciate the gusto to make something kind of, like, thoroughly disgusting. Like, there is something almost admirable about trusting the audience enough to take them to a world that's thoroughly unpleasant, that's going to be exploring subject matter that's not happy or pleasant in any way, and provide no sort of sell for that. Just be like, this is it. Fucking sucks. This is what the world is. I mostly do like this movie. But for me, I definitely understand where you're coming from in terms of the pacing. And some of the subplots are unnecessary. I do find some of the suspense set pieces in this movie, though, really good, especially early on. I think the movie at its best actually does create some of the most scary or frightening scenes in the movie just by the revelation of what level they wake up on.
Yeah.
Like, actually, the gore in the movie, it's kind of almost secondary to just being, like, the anticipation.
Well, just the idea of that your food could be that much worse.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's like, hey, guess what? Tomorrow it could be better, or it could be way, way worse.
Yeah. And every time the character wakes up and looks at the number, it does give you almost an immediate visceral reaction. Like, you're like, oh, okay, I can rest for a little bit.
Yeah.
Or just like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Every
person that you meet throughout this movie, like, reacts pretty differently, but, like, as far as from the levels are concerned, they all act really similar.
Yeah. I will say, too, that I do think, one thing that's interesting about this movie is, as we've said, none of these characters are terribly, fleshed out, but I do find it interesting that I also wouldn't say they're necessarily, like, archetypes. Like, none of these are necessarily recognizable figures. Mm-hmm. They are just kind of, like, they're caricatures, but they have, like, their own sort of weird little intricacies and sort of nuances to them. But they're not thoroughly developed, but they are very interesting characters. I mean, especially, I think, the most interesting and also the most repulsive is the first person we meet.
Oh, yeah.
This, like, sort of old man.
He's explaining the rules, and, like, you're allowed to bring one thing with you into this tower when you stay there for, like, 90 days or something?
It's something like that.
Some people can choose to be there for a certain length of time.
I think it's, like, 4 or 5 months, and it's something like every 30 days you get reset on a different level or something like
right.
that.
And part of what goes along with this is, like, after you leave, you're promised something. And, you know, there are people that can't leave, so they can't really get anything out of it, you know?
Yeah.
It's like the main character is promised a degree, like some kind of a an acclaimed degree of some sort.
And it's almost like this thing that the other character finds to mock him about.
Yeah, he's like, oh, you're gonna get a degree because you came here?
Yeah. I do think it's a very interesting film. I'm not familiar with the filmmaker. I don't know, you know, if they've made other films of this nature. I'd be interested to check out what they do from here, because I do think this must have been created on a fairly low budget, given how it's set up. And visually, I do think it's actually really well refined. You know, this movie is low budget, but it does have a very clear visual sensibility to it. You know, you can see that care was taken to give it a style.
It's I certainly like the production design of this film.
Yeah. It's just a very ugly, intentionally ugly style.
Oh, it's super government building looking.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think it's an interesting film. You know, I will say, if you are not a person that has a strong stomach, do not watch this.
Yeah, there's a lot of heads getting hit.
Even for me, who I you know what's funny is, it's weird, is like my venture into horror movies really only started like 4 or 5 years ago. We'll probably talk about this longer on a different episode, but essentially I only really started getting into horror movies like 5 or 6 years ago, and I when I started, I had like the weakest stomach. Like, I could not watch anything in horror movies without getting really easily grossed out. Like, fucking, I remember, what was it, even just like something like Paranormal Activity, which has no gore.
Yeah.
Like, I remember like just seeing like somebody getting dragged, and I was like, no,
that's
no,
scary though.
No.
Like, that movie's legit scary.
Or, you know, something like fucking the original Halloween, which is not gory at all in retrospect.
Yeah, not at all.
It'd be like just the knife going in. I'd be like, ah. And now it's like, I'll fucking like watch Midsommar and I'll just be like, yeah, man, bring it on.
I can't bring it with on, those bro. Scenes, man. Seeing gore now really like bothers me a lot.
But in this movie, fuck me, dude. There's a moment like 20 minutes in where I literally was just like, oh fuck, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to watch this. It's gnarly. It is super fucking gnarly. Yeah, I don't know. For me, I'm gonna say I think I'm a little bit more positive on this movie than you.
Yeah, I definitely don't have a recommendation to give to you for this movie.
Yeah, so you're kind of like right on the line. You're like, I don't think this is bad, I don't think it's good.
It's like there's definitely stuff I liked about it, but like overall it felt a little derivative of other okay. things that I've already seen. So there's other movies out there that are better that do the same thing as this movie.
Okay. Yeah, for me, I you know, I think the combination of and I think that's also another point of personal preference, which is I kind of like I don't mind the like hitting you over the head with the politics. I kind of was like, yeah, man, I'm into this. Fucking, I'm a lefty. Like, bring it. I mean, we both are. But like, you want a little more nuance, and I'm like, yeah, fucking tell the idiots in the back row.
I just don't want to be told the thing that I already know.
Yeah. I mean, part of me is just, I think part of me always just imagines there's like some like right-wing inceller like watching it and just getting really angry at it the whole movie, and I'm like, fuck yeah.
So you're getting more enjoyment out of something that's happening in the real life instead of on the screen.
No, but I do think this movie is like, it's really well defined. It's got a clear and concise style to it. I'd be very interested to see what the filmmaker does after this, because I do think they have a really strong hold as a director. I think actually what lets the movie down in a lot of ways is the writing, more so than the direction.
Yeah.
The direction I think actually is really great. I think it's the writing. You know, we say that this is not a subtle screenplay. It's not really fully fleshed out in terms of the characters and the ideas of the movie.
But visually, I think it really knocks it out of the
park. And it does really well at, again, establishing that tone of dread through sometimes really graphic things and sometimes through simple things. I like it. It's a mild recommendation for me. But you know, the thing about it is for this one, it's one of those things where you can easily make that choice yourself. It's on Netflix. So it's free to stream and it's only 1 hour, 40 minutes. I'm just going to say on my end, even though I'm giving it a mild recommendation, be ready for some gnarly shit.
Like, it's gnarly. It's got subtitles, you know, and it's gonna hit you over the head with some stuff that maybe you already know.
But yeah, between that, you got some interesting picks for some movies from both me and Brian this week. You got our reviews of these two new films. We'll be back next week with another episode. We haven't figured out just what it's going to be yet.
But we're going to review something, and we're going to talk to you about it.
Obviously, coronavirus has thrown up a lot of our plans in the air. But if you do have ideas, hit us up on Instagram. Hit us up on Twitter. Maybe you guys got something very creative that you want to hear us talk about.
Maybe there's a top 10, like, movies with babies in it that you
want to see. give us a weird random list. Or maybe... maybe something simple. Maybe there's a movie that's from the past that maybe we haven't seen that you want us to review. Or maybe there's a franchise you want us to explore. We're open to suggestions right now.
Yeah, also feel free to send us any of your, like, audio snippets from your own phones. We have done this before where we had people calling out, like, movies that they liked. We want to share your thoughts on it.
Obviously, a lot of people are home and watching things they've never seen before. Let us know what you're watching. But I think that's it for me and Brian this week. We want to thank you again for listening, and we'll see you
on the internet.
Thanks, guys.